Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
3, 2, 1. Salutations, everybody. It is Maddie here today, and welcome to episode 295 of the Ham Radio Podcast. It is just me, your host, Mr. Maddie. No Carrick, no Dustin this week, sadly. The reasoning behind that is there was a miscommunication between myself and my editor, so you all know I like to do daily videos outside of Saturdays, although if you're a patron this week, you will be getting a Saturday video. Sometimes we do those bonus videos. Those will go live to the public. It is a Dragon Age 2021 review. Once again, that will go live for free later on down the line. But for those of you who want to check it out or you are a patron, just know that is something that is coming very soon. But anyway, like to upload daily. And so we had a video prepared on Xbox and their next move, whether it be with Sega or Square Enix, and just analyzing some things happening within the industry between those companies and talking about those moves. And it was a JRPG focused video, which was really refreshing. It was fun to do, even though some people bitched and complained, which has seemed to be the case quite a bit, that you know, people will come in and auto dislike the video now. And I don't know. I don't care, man. I'm going to do what I find interesting. But anyway, I had to end up editing that video myself because there was a miscommunication, and I wanted to make sure I got the video out to all of you because it shouldn't be on you folks, or I should rather say you should still get your content. And so I said to Carrick and Dustin, hey, things are going to get bumped back an easy hour, 2 hours, so why don't you guys just take the week off, and I will handle this week's show, because that makes it easier to manage. I could have asked them maybe to do the show and I would have hopped out, but I felt like that was not right because it was my miscommunication between myself and my editor. So it is just me this week. It's going to be, of course, very relaxed. We're going to chat about things like major Game Pass additions. We're going to talk about Starfield again. We're going to talk about Sony buying Evo, which was really interesting, as well as announcing Haven Studio with Jade Raymond. Really psyched for her. I'm excited to see what PlayStation does there. We have the Xbox Indie Showcase, which was announced as well this week. We're going to see some really cool games, ones that I've been looking forward to. And then we have the Square Enix Showcase highlights. Lastly, your patron questions. So that's sort of the rundown of everything we're going to be talking about in this show, alongside, of course, what I've been playing. We like to open things up with that. So if you're new here, welcome, first of all. We had 20,000 plus listeners on our last episode when I had looked, and that is one of our highest listened to episodes. And before that, we had a BioWare episode, which past like 24,000. So, you know, we're not running off of numbers here by any means, but I just want to thank all of you who have switched over from Defining Duke over to here and listen to more of our show. I try to make a very conscious effort that there is no overlap in our conversations. Yes, we will hit the same topics, but if you are, for example, Defining Duke listener, me and Carrick had a discussion about, of course, Bethesda being acquired by Xbox on our Xbox show. And the conversation we had there versus what we had on Ham Radio, they were two completely different topics, both equally insightful, though. It was something I was really proud of. We try to make a very conscious effort to not avoid things where there is no overlap, but really to the point of just making sure the conversation is always fresh and continuing to develop our thoughts. So to those of you who are coming over or you're new, you're just joining the channel, welcome. This is just a laid-back gaming show I do every week. It goes live on Fridays, audio only, to patrons. If you don't want to go ahead and sign up, that's fine. I understand. We are at, last I looked, 375 patrons, which is just phenomenal. And so thank you to those of you who are signing up. But if you don't want to, totally get it. It goes live for free every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern time on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, all that stuff, which is great. So you can listen wherever, whenever you feel like. The show continues to grow, and we're stoked about that. We continue to be really stoked about that. I never found podcasting to be my angle, but I am more than embracing it. I enjoy doing podcasts. it's always a good way to round up the week, put a bow on it. You know, because I'm so used to being on camera and I have good energy. This is honestly, these shows are the times that I can be on camera and just talk in what is my less camera-y voice, right? Everyone's got a camera voice, like salutations, everybody, versus what's going on, everybody, you know? So it's just great to sit behind the mic, chat with all of you. You all know I love doing some solo shows. It's not like an ego thing. I just like to sometimes sit down and connect with the audience, because really when you look back to the start of the show, I'm the only host who's been there since day one. So I think it's important to just maintain the connection that we have and continue to communicate. So yeah, with that, be sure to sign up if you're interested on the Patreon. Outside of that, any housekeeping stuff? No, just a lot of Xbox conversations this past week, and I think now it'll start to slow down. Famous last words. probably won't, who knows? But yeah, this past week was a lot of Xbox information, Starfield rumors, Bethesda info. We had a lot of talks on the channel about how Bethesda may be approaching their deals with PlayStation. I suggested the idea that when Phil was referring to legacy content, he could have also been, in a manner of speaking, referring to the future. That may sound really weird, but I talked about how in that video that stuff that is already PlayStation exclusive, like Deathloop or Ghostwire Tokyo, may be a multi-plat release in subsequent entries if that franchise, continue on. And so I thought we just had some really good conversations this week. I'm really proud of it, and I'm happy with our output. These videos have been getting bigger too, which is kind of interesting. Normally I've just been sitting around the 10 to 12 minute mark, and we've been doing pretty consistent 15 to 20 minute bangers. And you know, it's been great. You know, I'm just very happy for the engagement and people willing to listen. And we'll certainly be talking about that when we get into the Starfield rumors. But yeah, anyway, for what I've been playing this week, I always like to share with you all what games I've been dipping in and out of, because of course, while the games I play, I tend to talk about on the channel, I also play some things that I don't really have an opportunity to talk about. And this is my chance to do so, because, you know, there's definitely games that, I know would sink my channel and the algorithm and stuff, like, a lot of JRPGs I play. Like, if I was to make a Final Fantasy IX video, that's one of the games I've been playing. If I was to make a Final Fantasy IX video, that would hurt my channel. And that's okay. I like the ability to have games I play and make content about, like a Mass Effect or a Dragon Age. And then I like having games I can just quietly enjoy to myself. I think it's an important balance to have. And then just being able to ramble about them here for, you know, because I imagine most people who listen to our podcast are people who give an extra shit, is what I like to say. You care a little bit more about maybe what I have to say, or what Carrick has to say, or what Dustin has to say. And that is, once again, much appreciated. But I digress. Let's talk about what we're playing. So, ladies and gentlemen, I have been playing, as I said, Final Fantasy IX. I'm about 5 hours in. I got it on Nintendo Switch. I bought the physical copy because the Asian English import box art was sick. And I thought it was actually pretty interesting. It's actually missing a rating on it. So yeah, it's just a straight import. And I just had to add the box art. I knew nothing really about the game other than my friend saying, hey, you're going to really dig this. And I like that. There's something good feeling about that, that word of mouth being sold on a game. It brings me back to my childhood in a lot of ways. That's how I found out about, I think, of Star Wars Battlefront. That's probably my most famous tale of a game discovery through word of mouth. You know, I remember sitting there second grade, it was math class, and my buddy Gary was just like, hey, there's this Star Wars, we were talking about Star Wars games, and I said, I wish you could play a Star Wars game where you could just be anyone you want. And he said, there's this game called Battlefront where you can play as a stormtrooper or a rebel soldier. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, even Anakin Skywalker. And to me, that was just this like mind-boggling moment. And then I told my parents about it, you know, because I didn't know much about the internet at that time. My only access to learning about games was through flyers and stuff. So to be able to just tell them about it, and then they found it at like a Circuit City or a Best Buy, and you know, it's my birthday, and I remember opening up a copy of Battlefront 1, and it's like this thing in your head comes to life. There's just something amazing about that. So, you know, maybe I'm an overly nostalgic person, but I like to discover games that way. Lost Odyssey was one I bought on a whim, a complete whim. Bought it on eBay, just went, hey, Xbox, JRPG, original creators of Final Fantasy. This sounds good. Okay, boom. And I think sometimes going in with that blind, or going in blind, rather, is healthy for how I critique games. I think it keeps my reviews fresh because a lot of people absorb every single trailer, so they know major story moments, and I can come from an angle of, hey, I didn't watch anything on this. I try to pull my head as much as I possibly can out of deep game coverage, is what I like to call it. And by that, I mean, last one I did it for was Cyberpunk, but even Cyberpunk, I didn't do frame-by-frame trailer analysis, you know, outside of the 2018 gameplay. I am getting so off track, but that's what this is all about. You know, this is like I said, this is going to be a very loosey-goosey show. We're just going to be kicking it. So Final Fantasy IX, like I said, 5 hours in. You could definitely feel its age. This is such a low-effort remaster. you can see the character models have been redone, the backdrop art. There's a charm to that art style. For those who don't know, these older Square Enix games from the very early 2000s and late 90s had 2D art as their backgrounds, and then they would have a 3D model kind of running around the art. And it looked kind of cool, almost like you were running around a storybook, in my opinion. But where the laziness, and I'm going to use that word, where the laziness kind of kicks in is, even on the Switch, like, the load times are strangely long. Some of the menu navigation is slow and feels delayed. The frame rate when you're in the overworld, at least on Switch, is pretty terrible. So this is not at least a good Switch port, I should say. I was going to play it on Xbox through Game Pass, but once again, that box art won me over. It's becoming an Achilles heel of mine. I was like, damn, I kind of want to own this, especially because it was this Asian English import where it looked like it would be something that's going to be hard to get many years down the line. And it's just a lesson I've learned too many dang times where I see something go, it was $50, and I go, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. I can get this whenever. And then you go to get it and it's $90 and you go, well, I don't know if I wanted to spend $90. I've just learned to sometimes bite the bullet. Mega Man Battle Network is a perfect example. I got all 6 entries complete in box. And the first one I bought for $80 and I went, overpaid, man. Now it's going for about $200, $250. So technically I did not. It has only gone up in price. So yeah, just a little advice from me to you with game collecting. I'll have game collecting videos coming out on the channel too. I have one for the Xbox 360, which I'm going to pace the release of that because I've been getting a little tired of the PlayStation comments. Usually that type of shit doesn't eat me up, but it's just like, no matter how much I've emphasized, like, hey, I'm just excited about things and clearly, you know, Bethesda, a company I've covered for many years, and not even Obsidian in Exile. Like, these are companies I've talked about for pretty much my entire channel's life, and it'd be the same thing with BioWare. You know, these are all mainstay creators that have just been in my ecosystem since the channel's inception. And, you know, my first big boom on my channel was Skyrim. And, yeah, I want to release that Xbox video, but there is a timeliness to all of that where I understand some people say, fuck them, ignore that, and I agree. But there's a timeliness where I don't want certain videos to get swamped by BS PlayStation hatred or console war hatred. It's just because I started to see that with my video about Xbox and Sega, where I thought, you know what, now we can pump the brakes a little bit. The conversations are kind of done, and I want to focus on some other stuff. I'm not going to do PlayStation videos to make up that ground, but it's very interesting to see how just a couple of videos of just pure excitement can ramp up some volatile people. It's a piece of plastic, and it's fascinating. But back to Final Fantasy IX. This is a story about Zidane or Zidane. I'm actually not sure how you pronounce your main character's name. But he goes to steal a princess from her castle. And it turns out the princess actually wants to escape and go to a different part of the country. And so you end up helping her do that. But you end up crashing in a forest. And this forest ends up almost crystallizing over through this mist. And so there's this mystery of the mist, which is powering objects, but also not. There's this this black mage army that's being created underground in this quaint village. There's a lot of at face value things seem fine, and there's this continuous discovery of darkness in the world. And I think that is a really good storytelling tool, is to lure the player into a clear false sense of security. I remember when the game first started up, I was like, we're gonna steal someone, and we're gonna end up on this world-spanning adventure. And what's interesting is I'm 5 hours in. I don't know what the real end goal is. What's our main journey? And I like that. I like that because I've played so many JRPGs, and especially, and understandably, because Final Fantasy was one of the more inspirational ones, if not the most inspirational JRPG series. All about crystals, you know, save the world. The elements are out of control. That type of stuff. And so to have a game where you're kind of a group of scoundrels almost, and you're just trying to get to this one location, Lindblom, and I have gotten there, and I'm like, okay, well, now we got here. Now what? And I think that's a very underrated narrative tool, because that sounds like something that could have been paced out over many hours of getting to Lindblom, now from Lindblom to wherever. But it seems like, okay, there's more to it than just getting here. The adventure's still being set up. And so I haven't played an old Final Fantasy game like this since 7. Final Fantasy 7, I played for the first time on my PC in, I want to say 2012, 2013. I remember it very well. I remember being very impressed and enjoying the heck out of it, and I really loved that game. And there's a good energy to this one as well. I really liked its card game. I think it's called Tetra. So there's a couple of little things in here that are neat about this game, and I believe it's the Final Fantasy creator's favorite one. That's what my buddies were telling me, which wasn't like a convincing factor, but I can see some elements as to why. There's a particularly different vibe to this game already than others, and the soundtrack is phenomenal. So yeah, I've been playing that a little bit, and it's actually been really, really solid. Of course, it feels old, but I have that, I don't want to say nostalgic mindset. I have the ability to accept a game's age and play it and enjoy it as is, which can definitely be an Achilles heel in some of my coverage when I go back to remasters and stuff. Because with certain games and their, because what will happen is you'll have something like Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning, where people will go, well, why didn't you like that remaster? And I think a lot of it boils down to price tag. It really does. So not that all of a sudden I'm getting $50 worth compared to Re-Reckonings. I think it was 40 or 20 if you already had a copy on PC. But I feel like it's such a case-by-case thing. But at the end of the day, if I were to go back to an old PS2 game or something, which I did back in December, I went back to a bunch of PS2 games, then yeah, it's easier for me to swallow a game's age, because I enjoyed that time period a lot. I think it was simplistic in its ways. It was the type of time where you'd see some really crazy experiments. Like, there's a remaster that came out recently called Stubbs the Zombie, and I look at something like that and think, dang, you know, that's something that will not exist ever in this day and age. Just games are way too expensive to make, and if you're an indie dev, you want to create like a unique art style or something eye-catching, and in the case of Stubbs, like being a zombie and just running around and creating an army sounds cool, but you almost need more meat on that bone, pardon the pun. And so I appreciate that time a lot. There's Mega Man X Command Mission, one of my favorite turn-based RPGs. And as much as I adore what Capcom's doing, I want to see them go back to Mega Man, which unfortunately seemingly... Actually, no, there was one part of the leak, I think, that may have indicated something with Mega Man. But it didn't look like it, or it was up to speculation, whereas you already saw them planning like a Champions Edition for Street Fighter VI, of course. But Capcom, I just don't envision them saying, like, let's go back and make a Mega Man RPG. Right now, they seem to be, and understandably so, just cooking along with DMC, and Dragon's Dogma 2 is a rumor, but of course there's Resident Evil, which is really, I would say, more popular than ever. And Resident Evil 8 is highly anticipated by a lot of people. So, yeah, I think, you know, that time period is so appreciated, and Final Fantasy IX has been bringing me some comfort. You know, it's been a stressful week, just in general, just a couple health things. And so it's just been nice to have a game bring you to a simpler time. Not to get too heavy, but like I said, this is just kind of a vibe show, and I like to talk very openly and honestly. Because there was a... almost a, like a nodule? I don't know what the word would be. But anyway, it was a lymph node at the end of the day on the back of my head that was swelling up a lot. And so I had to get an ultrasound for it because it was starting to feel inflamed. And it seems like it was more of a viral infection because it's gone back down. But fortunately, the ultrasounds came back clear. But we have to keep inspecting it, and they're deciding whether or not they want to remove it or not, and so we need to just wait on that more. Fortunately, I'm okay, like nothing's wrong. You know, I've recently already had blood tests, so it's nothing major to be concerned about, but I get very stressed out over health, so just having a game that kind of calms the spirits has been really good. On top of that, I've been playing Super Smash Bros. Just a lot of time on the Switch lately, which is interesting because The Switch, I love my Switch, but it's been hard to love it as much as I once did because next gen, just between its fast load times and how enjoyable the games on it have been and how they're being upgraded for free, my Switch has sort of been taking the back seat for a while, but now it's back out. My friends and I have been just playing Smash every other night, it seems like, just hopping into a lobby for 3 hours, 4 hours sometimes, and just fighting constantly, doing Battlefield stages and doing Omega stages and these one-on-one battles and cycling out. I've been playing a lot of Hero lately, which for those who don't know is the Dragon Quest character. He's not that great outside of his RNG roles, which it's hilarious to get my friends' reactions when I hit them with a thwack and just they're at like 30% and they just skyrocket out of the arena, you know, getting those crit hits and just shocking them. Because I'm all right at Smash. I'm not a good player. So someone like Hero is fun for me because I'm just like, yeah, RNG, thanks. But I've also been playing Falco. He's probably my actual best character at the moment. So, you know, we've been just cycling out characters. Sephiroth's been a lot of fun to play as. And it's just impressive to always go into that roster. I hope one day they do a Smash Ultimate Complete Edition where they have everything on cartridge. One of my biggest fears, and I don't know what it is, but I just feel like, for me, I get nervous with everything being digital at times that I want to make sure I have that thing with everything that it came out with, its patches and everything, a finalized version, kind of like what we used to see with some greatest hits titles or player's choice titles on GameCube and PlayStation respectively. Something like that, like a complete edition for Smash Ultimate, so you could have that cartridge and say like, okay, pop it in, everything is here, all the characters, all the patches, all the nodes or modes, sorry, spirits, everything. I would really be happy if they did something like that, just so I could buy it and be like, okay, if Nintendo Online goes offline, which obviously it won't, like their store, but it seems like everything on the storefront eventually goes away. The ability to just say, okay, we've got this thing and it's got everything on it would be nice, but that's likely feeding into the pocket of Nintendo that I despise feeding. I'm talking about you, Skyward Sword. So yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. Anything else? I'm thinking through my PlayStation. I went back to Assassin's Creed Valhalla a little bit. Just messed around with some of their new updates. And I just like being in that world. I think I'm done with it now, officially. After about like 60 hours. I think I'm good now. I feel like I've seen enough. I beat the story. And then I just kind of moved around the world. Did some objectives, some world events, and just enjoyed a little more of that choppy feeling combat. And I don't know, Ubisoft Worlds, I thought they did a really good job last year. I thought between Watch Dogs Legion and Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I think they did a good job with their open worlds and making them fun to explore. So I'm excited for whatever they do next. I know a lot of people were very critical of Valhalla and its kind of pacing and length. And it seems like a series that will never satisfy everybody, to be honest with you. But because like if they went back to their original roots and said, okay, you know, much shorter story and in an open world with some completionist side activities, people will complain it's too familiar. I just want them to go back to the Unity formula, honestly. Go look at my review. If you don't believe me, go look at my review. I was a fan of Unity from day one, okay? I'm not one of these people who played it on next gen and said, this is the Assassin's Creed game that you never knew you'd love. You know, no. Like, I've been saying since day one, I like that game. I understood it was broken. I did not have really many buggy issues. I had one moment where I did clip through the floor and fall into underneath the map, rather. And yeah, it definitely had those types of issues. But the co-op, the multiple ways you could assassinate a target, the parkour. You know, there are people who still make parkour montages, but not even that, just the parkour in general. It's been such a step down since then. It makes no sense that they make this next-gen Assassin's Creed. And then now we're seeing games like Valhalla and Syndicate come out, and they are for next generation hardware still. They're not cross gen, but they're doing less in the terms of parkour animations. Doesn't really make sense to me. But anyway, I get why some people have frustrations with the franchise. I've been enjoying Valhalla, but like I said, I think I'm done now. I've just been enjoying these opening months, and it'll continue to be this way. Kind of meandering from game to game. I finished Gears of War 4. That was another one. As you can see, these are just random titles. And I want to kind of, I'm realizing how much I do rely on the kind of structured release schedule, because it kept me in line where I've noticed I'm going into games and I'm forgetting certain things. And I'm just all over the place, right? I just mentioned four different games I played in this last week. And so I'm trying to narrow that focus down. I usually am a 2 to 3 game type of player, usually 2 at most. But sometimes I will stretch it to 3. But, you know, next week I'm going to hop into Monster Hunter Rise. So I'm likely going to try to finish Gears of War 5 before then. So you see what happens is like, just piled on, baby, just piled on. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing. Been a really enjoyable time just to sift through that backlog. And so now let's go ahead and get into the news. I just remember Gotham Knights got delayed, so I'm going to add that to the news report as well. See how loose this show is? If you're here, welcome. I mean, this is what I like to do with the show. You know, it's no structure, no script, just kind of kick back, chat, and relax. So we've talked about this pretty extensively on the channel already, so I don't want to go ahead and I don't want to say dive too deep, but I have videos on these respective topics, but I would feel it'd be weird to not expand those thoughts a little bit more with the time that I have on the game or on these games. So Xbox Game Pass really made some noise this past week. I'm looking at some of the pictures of their library and it's like, what? So today or yesterday, as we record this podcast on March 17th, Empire of Sin got added, Nier Automata on PC got added, and that's actually a different port from the one that was actually very buggy and broken. This version of Nier Automata seems to have been tinkered with, and so it actually runs a lot better. So if you have Game Pass and you have not played Nier and you only have a PC, this is actually a better port to play, which I thought was really interesting, and I got to read more on that, but I do know that is something that is the case. Star Wars Squadrons, Torchlight 3 is on PC, EA Play has been added to PC this week. EA Play was missing for a while. We also have, coming soon, we have Outriders, Day One, Yakuza 6, Undertale, Octopath Traveler, Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire, Ultimate Edition. Just, what? I mean, yeah, some people are going to call me a fanboy, and I mean, yeah, if I'm a fanboy of good value, then feel free to feel free to hold me to it. You know, that is something I'll eat all day. I'll gladly be a big old fanboy of good deals. So right now, as it stands, you can get all the Yakuza games on Game Pass. You can get Empire of Sin. I almost said Age of Empires, which I think is a mobile game. What's the most exciting game on this list, though, for me? You know, you've got all these great games coming. What excites me the most? I got to be honest with everybody. I'm looking very much forward to Outriders. I'm going to be playing the demo this weekend just because, you know, we're getting closer to the launch. And, of course, as an Xbox show with Defining Duke, I know a lot of people are going to be interested in more of my thoughts. And my buddies just got their next-gen console, so we're going to be diving into that this weekend. But until I update my thoughts on that, right now the most exciting one on this whole list, I wouldn't blame you. There's so many good picks that you may not share this, but Octopath Traveler. This is a game that I was extremely excited for. It's the reason I bought my Nintendo Switch. When I saw the reveal of Nintendo Switch and it was called like Project Octopath, the art style really won my heart. I love what it is. It is a return to form for what Square Enix was known for in a lot of ways, these kind of sprite-based JRPGs. In Octopath Traveler, as the name would suggest, Octopath, you have 8 party members that you gradually acquire over time. And each has their own field skills that you can use, like stealing or alchemy, and interacting with different people in the world, intimidating. And you can finish quests this way. You can get items this way. And so it requires creative use of that. It becomes a little gimmicky over time, and not as flexible as what it appeared to be. But still, being able to play as like Tarion and steal from someone was really cool. It's got a great job system, and it changes everyone's outfits in like kind of a wheel. So you can make Tarion like a thief into a war master or something. And that's the type of stuff I really dig. I love job systems in RPGs. I love seeing like the stats change and finding the ideal build for all these classes. And so you've got these 8 characters. The story is pretty segmented. So each of them have their own individual stories, but they look like they're alone even though they're not. So what'll happen is you'll have like, I'm going to stick with Tarion. You'll have his story and you're going through it. And in the cutscenes, he's by himself. And he acts like he's by himself and he communicates like he's by himself, but then combat starts and they're all together. And it's not until, and this is not a spoiler, but it's not until the very, very end of the game they try to tie everything together. But it's definitely one of the sore spots of the game, for sure, is its story. But, and I don't want to say this is a but, like a, but, you know, make an excuse, like, it's really not a huge deal. I would love a great story in this game, and we're seeing this same team who's doing Octopath try that with Project Triangle Strategy. Play that demo if you haven't. It seems a lot better, and it seems to take its choice and consequence a lot more seriously. But when it comes to Octopath Traveler, the combat is just so superb. So you have this thing called the, they call it the Brave system, where pretty much as you fight, you can acquire points. But in Octopath, you can use these points to boost. So you can save up to four Brave points or boost points, and then you can power up a fire attack, or you can power up four individual melee attacks in a row. And this works really well because enemies will have shields on them. So let's say an enemy is weak to slashing or lightning, and you can boost your attack and then hit that shield. And when you break their shield, then you're attacking their health bar. So it's a really interactive gameplay system for a turn-based RPG. The game can be pretty tough as nails at times. It does require some grinding, but the art style is phenomenal. It was made in Unreal Engine 4, but yet it looks like it's a new take on the 16-bit RPGs. And it is so inspirational as a product to me, and I'm so thankful it exists. It sold 2 million plus copies. It is a really exciting game, one that I think is worth your attention, and especially if it's on Game Pass. It will be, I don't want to say a slow start, but like I said, to get all of your 8 party members, you start off with like one, and then you go to another chapter and you'll pick up another party member and their story will start, and then you'll start another. And so what happened is you'll go through like 8 chapter ones, and you'll go through a bunch of chapter twos and threes, and then some fours, and you see what I mean? It'll have this weird pacing where now you're going back to chapter 2 for someone and then on to chapter 5 for another. And so it could be a little jarring, and I think what happened was because all of these are individualized stories, they won't know if I'm going from Taryon to Ophelia's story or Ophelia's to Alphen's story and so on and so forth. So I get why they structured it the way they did, but it is flawed at its core. But this is the game to me on this whole list of additions that happened this week that if you wanted to know what I'm going to tell you to try out, I would insist it be Octopath Traveler. It's just a real return to form in those types of RPGs. And I know my channel, a lot of you out there dig RPGs big time. I really want to look into Empire of Sin in the terms of curiosity. I've played Star Wars Squadrons. I made a very positive video on it saying like they did it again. EA made another great Star Wars game. Of course, I'm curious about Outriders. I've already played Undertale. I'm kind of iffy on Undertale. I don't think it's a bad game. It's just not really my cup of tea. But Empire of Sin, I like those kind of micromanaging style games. I do remember when it came out, though. Let me double check real quick. I'm pretty sure Empire of Sin review. I'm pretty sure this game, and I don't like to run off of this stuff, but yeah, the Metacritic's at a 63%, user score 4.3. I trust that a little bit more. Yeah, so this was a game that I know didn't really get a lot of love, unfortunately. So I'm not sure what it is that people did not like about it, but I thought it looked really solid, but I guess it's missing depth and it's wasting potential is what I'm reading here. So yeah, it says release way too early. The balance is completely off like every aspect of gameplay. Your boss becomes an unstoppable killing machine. Certain hired goons are overpowered. Certain ones are useless. It's way too easy to take out enemy bosses. The list goes on. Good visuals, good ideas. Other than that, a huge disappointment due to the lack of depth. Repetitive, is unpolished, therefore simply boring. The bugs might eventually go away, but it will still be boring. Unfortunately, a lame game doomed to soon be forgotten. Steer clear if you're out for a good CRPG. Look elsewhere. Yeah, so apparently it's this turn-based strategy game about like gang wars, and they kind of dropped the ball on it. I remember when I saw the trailer, it was one of those moments where I was like, oh, this can't be bad. Like, you can't fuck this up. But I'm still going to try it, still going to give it a shot. I'm still going to stay open-minded to it because I think it does look cool. And, you know, as a big fan of Mafia 2, I like those types of stories. I like those types of games. L.A. Noir is another one. Those those time periods speak to me a little bit more because when I was a student, those were my favorite to study. Now, if you're listening to this, you've never played Yakuza or Yakuza, now's your chance, right? A whole series is there outside of the newest one, Like a Dragon. You have Yakuza 0, Kiwami 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So, yeah, if you haven't, I mean, I played Kiwami 1 and 2. I played a little bit of 4 on PS3. I remember buying it used. Yeah, I bought it used. I remember that pretty well. And then after that, I stopped playing it because I was lost. But now that I played Kiwami 1 and 2, yeah, I'm going to hop into 3 for sure. This is all on Game Pass, so it's pretty crazy. I would say keep your eye on Outriders if you're a Game Pass sub, but it is console only. So if you don't own an Xbox system, you may be missing out on that, unfortunately. But for me, that's the one I'm also anticipating quite a bit. And this is likely going to be a trend for Xbox in the future. This is something that we didn't really touch on at all with Defining Duke, is that I think this is going to be the first of many moves. I don't have a source, by the way. I will always indicate. No one's ever like quoted me in an article or anything, but I want to just make sure in case anyone ever thinks about it, I will indicate if a source has told me something. I just personally believe that this will be the first test drive of a big day one release with Game Pass. And I think Outriders is the ideal fit. This looks like a game that's sort of in transition. It definitely looks like it was a service game at first, and then they took out the service elements, and I think they will start to add them back in. And that is why it's on Game Pass, because otherwise they've really beat the head of or beat the drum of we're not a service game. We are a co-op game. But I just think there were too many signs with how it played, how it looked, how its HUD was. I mean, it just reeked of a service game. The difference, however, is when I played this game, and once again, did not play them, when I played the preview, it was not like what I felt with Avengers, where when I played Avengers, I felt like this was something else, and now it is not this, because of the environments and the combat and dialogue and story, just all felt disconnected. Whereas this all felt, while it's not perfect, it felt tied together in a way. It felt like this was the intent of the design, and maybe they had an in-game store with cosmetics that they pulled out or something along those lines. I think this stuff will eventually be added in, and if the game is good, I mean, right now I'm rooting for Outriders, not because it's just on Game Pass, but because I, once again, go back and look at my preview in August. I literally said I actually really like this game. I went in not ready to care about it, and I walked out, and I've talked about it for months since. So I really do hope this game catches an audience, but I do think this is once again going to be the test drive to see, hey, how much of a player base is going to tap into a day one console release on Game Pass. How does Square Enix benefit from this? How long does this last, and how many sales translate through Game Pass? A lot of stats are going to be shown here, and I imagine maybe once they have the numbers in order, maybe in the summer with something like E3, we'll see some type of Game Pass related announcement that says, or a game announced that says, hey, we're going to be day one Game Pass, even though we're working in a third party capacity. You know, because I think of something like Scarlet Nexus, I feel like that might be a great day one Game Pass game, because nobody is talking about that. That is a game that has no one talking about it, and it looks great. It's from the creators of Tales of Vesperia. It's this kind of JRPG where you have telekinetic abilities, and there's enemies like I think it was like a high heel with like a flower vase attached to it. It's very much an interesting style JRPG. Action combat. Really pretty looking game. It comes from Namco. Or comes from Bandai, sorry. And, you know, I feel like with no one talking about it, this would be another great game. Because, by the way, part of the reason I'm tying it into this is I feel like since it was revealed at the Xbox Gameplay Showcase, and it was actually the only game there that I can think of that had gameplay during what was otherwise a CGI showcase, I could totally see them saying, hey, let's get more people talking about this, because that game needs more exposure. And it's literally one of those stories where if they see the numbers for Outriders and they go, hey, we need Scarlet Nexus there day one, because more people can try this out, talk about it, enjoy it, and then maybe you'll see more sales. I think this is going to be the backdoor play for a lot of companies who maybe aren't getting the attention, because what we saw with Outriders is it went from a game that maybe people played and went, ah, this is solid, or played and went, ah, this sucks, or maybe they really liked it. But more importantly were those two first groups, which were in the middle or kind of off. And now they have an opportunity to play it, talk about it. What you're seeing is Game Pass is becoming sort of a marketing tool in a way, where Outriders, this is the most relevant I've seen it online, you know, in its conversation with other people. And I think that's something that's really, really important to nail here, is that companies see this type of stuff. So we will have to wait until after Outriders and see the numbers until I think we get more day one Game Pass announcements. So, you know, don't expect this to be a very consistent thing, but this is a very exciting move by Xbox, and I think it's great value for everybody. I think it, even if you're a PlayStation fan, I think this should make you happy, because it challenges PlayStation to see what they can do to offer that value. You can literally say, hey, well, I pay for PS Plus, and they're doing Play at Home, by the way, which is awesome. They gave away like another 10 games. That is sick. And they also did Ratchet and Clank before that. So they continue to give out free games, and you're seeing them try to match Xbox. And I don't mean it in a competitive way. People are going to take it the wrong way. But you're seeing them try to make sure they're adjusting their fan base. But eventually what's going to hurt them are these third-party Game Pass acquisitions, where people are going to go, well, I'm paying 60, or when it becomes 70, you're going to start to really enter a battle of attrition where, do I really want to keep paying 60, 70 for each of these games? Or do I want to just go to Xbox and pay $15 a month? And some of these third-party games will come to day one Game Pass. I mean, that's a very valuable weapon to have if you are engaging in a battle of the consoles. But anyway, not much more to add other than Game Pass continues to thrive, and rightfully so. I'm really happy to say that when it was first announced, I went, it's going to change the industry. And people were like, too many old games. But this experiment, Xbox stuck with it. The potential they clearly saw in it is what many of us saw in it. And now we're seeing them really reap the benefits, and we're seeing things come together where something like a Bethesda acquisition is exciting, because if you get a Game Pass membership, you can have access to all of that instead of just, I don't know, having things really locked away, like, say, on a PlayStation console. And that's no, like, jab to PlayStation, because I get the competitive nature of it, and you want to draw people to your console. But I think, just simply put, between a potential smart TV app, streaming on phones, tablets, PC, and Xbox, it's clear as day. Just these exclusives are way more accessible on the Xbox front. So PlayStation's moving over to the PC side more, and I'll be curious to see what they do over time. PC gamers, just say, you are winning. All right. Starfield rumors. Let's talk about them a little bit, because I made a whole video section talking about it. I wanted to make sure I just tapped into it one more time. So this article comes from Video Games 24/7. I usually don't like to use their site, since that bullshit article they wrote on Shirley Curry, but I figured it was the only one available, so we're going to go ahead. Actually, you know, hold on. We got to stick to our guns here. Let's see. Is there another one available? These people are clowns. Here we are. Games Radar. I like Games Radar. All right. The article is titled, Starfield is reportedly aiming to launch in 2021. Starfield's Bethesda's long-awaited sci-fi RPG could be launching as soon as this year, according to a journalist. Jeff Grubb, a VentureBeat reporter with a known track record for accurate leaks, appeared as a guest on The Dealer Gaming YouTube channel earlier this week. He claimed to know a few new details about Bethesda's plans regarding Starfield, claiming the developer will unveil the spacefaring RPG later this year at E3 2021 before aiming towards the end of the year. Grubb states that Bethesda is targeting a similar marketing cycle to that of Fallout 4, which, if you've been following Bethesda, which I imagine most of you have who are listening to this, this is to be expected. Back at E3 2015, Fallout 4 was officially unveiled to the world for the very first time, with Bethesda revealing that it would launch in just a few months later that year. According to Grubb, Starfield is targeting a release date in late 2021. Of course, the journalist states that is only the only complicating factor is obviously COVID-19, which could absolutely throw Bethesda's best laid plans completely out of whack, depending on how the rest of the year goes. While Grubb states that the current plan is to launch Starfield in 2021, this could easily change as the year unfolds. Now, bounce over to Twitter here. Our friend of the show, Jason Schreier, had the following to say on Twitter. Hold on, I got to find his tweet here. when someone said in response to the Gotham Knights download or delay that we'll be talking about later on the show, well, good. We're still getting Halo and Starfield this year, so we're okay. And Jason Schreier said, I don't know about that. Which what's interesting is both Halo and Starfield here are noticed or are mentioned rather. So I don't know if either of these games are or which of these games rather are going to be delayed. My money would probably be on Starfield. So I don't want to make this all about me. I'm going to X out some tabs here. Sorry, I don't want to make this all about me. But you know, I have been reporting this since I was looking up some old videos because I was curious. Hey, what was my first real mentioning of Starfield and its you know, when it's coming, and I mentioned back in September Bethesda was making this game a all hands on deck project. That's what I said back in September. I think it was 23rd. I said, but Starfield's an all hands on deck project, so you've got everyone pulling in on that. And I had that on a pretty reliable source. And then I looked at my Twitter. I was like, when was the first time I said Starfield's coming this year? And it was actually January 1st. And I've been saying it on my channel for a while. And like I said, I do not want to make this about me because it has nothing to do with the reporting of others. I just want people to understand because what I tweeted, I was like, hey, this is something I've been saying for months. And a lot of people were in the replies going like, yes, absolutely. Like you have been saying this for months, but suddenly there are articles popping up. And so I just want to air a minor bit of, is frustration the right word? I don't know, because I don't know if I care that deeply to be frustrated. It's like, all right, you know, kind of like, okay, I get I'm a YouTuber. Okay. Because this really started with Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. Back in May of last year, Jason Trier and I actually teamed up, and he gave me one of his scoops on Knights of the Old Republic and about how EA would not be involved. And I said, hey, like, are you cool with me using this in a video? Like, do you want to use it for yourself? And he said, no, you're good. Like, go for it, man. All yours. And that was awesome of him, by the way. I still thank him to this day. But I broke it on my channel and it didn't catch any traction. I thought to myself, okay, well, you know, no one cares about KOTOR right now. So of course it won't gain traction, but it's here. And I was the one who broke that story alongside Jason. I don't want to take credit for his scoop, but he gave me the scoop. I broke it to the public. And so, you know, you have like, what is it? Less than a year later, in the beginning of this year, Knights of the Old Republic rumors flare up and just someone in a podcast said the exact same thing I did. And I was just sitting there going, well, am I an asshole for this? Like, should I be kind of like, well, I said this first, you know, because is that what it's all about? Right. I'm still learning about this. I'm not one to prop my chest out and go, I have sources. And according to sources say, and you know, like I'm not about that. You know, I don't want to, you know, I have, I'm trying to think of the right way to word this. My goal is not to be the ultimate leakster. I have goals beyond that. You know, and I would care more about accurate info. I would care more for you to be here about the conversation and what I have to say on a subject than what scoop can I give you. I think it's a dangerous path to walk, is being the person who's just, you know, people listen to you because they're listening for keywords to pop up. And when you start to say, like, if I'm a Starfield leaker and all of a sudden I start talking Starfield, it's like, boom, you know, oh man, he's talking Starfield. Now let's listen. You know, I want to create an audience that wants to listen whenever I'm speaking. That's the goal there. And so I think the key to that is quality conversations, transparency, as I'm doing right here. So yeah, my goal is not to be this ultimate leakster. So I was like, all right, like I made sure people knew though. I said, hey, this is not taking away from someone else's work, but it feels like I'm shouting into the void because I did say this back in May. And eventually, you know, you go out, you get over it, whatever. I'm gonna make my video about it. I'm gonna talk about it because it was relevant again. I was like, okay, let's talk about it. Let's let people know. Here's what's happening. Kind of regurgitate. It was weird because I had to like regurgitate my own information that I put out there. Just instead reframing it from someone else's mouth. And so the same thing kind of happened here with Starfield. I've been saying it on my Twitter. I've been saying it in multiple videos for months. And I said back in September, it was an all hands on deck project. And now we know more than ever that with Xbox and Bethesda teaming up that they want it out this year. And at the very minimum, they want it revealed this year. And so, yeah, it was just, once again, there's no animosity towards any other reporters who share these stories. I think it's just a reality check for me that I guess I got a long way to go before people want to take what I have to say at not face value, but I have to prove that track record. And so for example, Knights of the Old Republic needs to be announced, the remake, by Aspyr, for people to know, like, when I said, hey, it is Aspyr. Like, I told people that, too. I said, granted, Jason Schreier pretty much put it out there clear as day. But before that, I had deduced it all through job listings and all that stuff, saying, like, hey, it's pretty obviously Aspyr. And I had that on pretty good authority as well, which is when I went forward with it. And so I have to wait for something like that. And for Starfield, I have to wait for it to be revealed in June and then have an announced a potential release date of this year. That's the one thing I made sure I didn't say. I was like, I said they want to release it this year. They want to. I did not say they're going to. They want to, though. I think the reveal this summer, and same thing with Aspyr, could make it for a 2-for-2, where then I would have a track record. I understand the reality check that I don't have a track record. So a lot of people were kind of inquiring about that and how I was feeling about that, which I appreciate. I appreciate those of you who listen and kind of want to take a deeper cut and think on that level, because I imagine most of you just scroll by and went, yeah, he did say that. Like, and that was it. So for those of you who did care enough to ask those questions, I just wanted to answer those first because, am I frustrated? No. But it's just one of those things where I don't have an ego. You know, I understand very well, like, we're all gaming YouTubers and creators. We're all very replaceable. A lot of these people get this immortality complex of like, I am the amazing leaker and you need me. It's like, dude, someone could step right into your shoes in a heartbeat. Same thing with me. So I don't take my position for granted and I try to aim higher and provide quality. And so, ultimately just wanted to share some thoughts on that. But let's talk Starfield. So once again, rumor is that we're getting this game as a reveal in the summer. Jason saying, I don't know about that when it comes to the release. Yeah, of course. I mean, nothing is, if you are making a game right now and you're setting it to reveal this summer and you're releasing it in the fall, at the very minimum, the reality is you are close to done. And it should be at some point in time in the future that within the next year, we'll say that's coming out. So let's say Starfield does get revealed this summer and it does get delayed out of 2021, which is always a realistic possibility. Number one, I think that would increase hype for the game. After Fallout 76, a lot of people, understandably so, lost trust in Bethesda. So if this was a game that got announced, there was hype, it was exciting, and then Bethesda said, hey, we're delaying this, it's not ready yet. And after 76, a lot of people would be like, okay, now I'm paying attention. Because now I know you're delaying it out of the holiday period where there's a lot of hype. So, okay, boom, gotcha. And so to me, that is extremely curious on how they will handle that and how they will get it out on time. The reason why I think they'll get it out this year is because Todd Howard has said this, so this is not a report from a source or anything. Todd Howard has said Starfield has been in active development since Fallout 4's DLC ended with Nuka World in August of 2016. So yeah, by the time this August hits, that'll put us at the 5-year mark for this game. Granted, they stopped for a little bit and obviously moved over to get Fallout 76 out, and then Bethesda Game Studios Austin handled that. So you could easily shave a year off and still you're in Bethesda Game Studios' wheelhouse of the 3 to 4 year development cycles that they're known for. That's always been their thing. That's the thing with these sources is, you know, when you look at the time they started active development of Starfield, you don't need sources to really even say, like, hey, it is going to get revealed this year, because just by the pattern and habits of Bethesda since 2003, 18 years, almost two decades now, if Starfield is revealed this year and released, really, that habit will have continued and you can further lock in more that, yeah, hey, this is the, you know, Bethesda does 3 to 4 year development cycles. So it'll have been 3 years since Fallout 76, but this is what happens when your studios expand. And so we are going to see these quicker turnarounds from Bethesda Game Studios. And with Starfield being in active development for so long, I have high expectations. What's the word I'm looking for? I have the expectation that this game will come out a little bit cleaner. I'm curious how much COVID has affected it. So that's one thing that'll be left to be seen. I think you can pretty much safely mark it on your calendar that you're going to see Starfield this summer. I think Xbox really wants to have something to show. I think that's the main thing. Have something to show for the partnership. Right now, we've seen a lot of conversations, and I'm not expecting any game announcements, by the way, but Xbox announced Perfect Dark way too early. Avowed, I think, was announced a little too early. It didn't really need to be announced when it was. What else was announced too early? Fable. These games were all announced too early. So there's two paths they can take. They can finally show off Starfield, which I think the time to know what this game is now. It'll be 3 years this June since its announcement, which, yeah, that's, we've waited long enough, right? Like, we knew it was a roadmap style announcement, but we've waited long enough, and I think the time is for people to know. But anyway, with Microsoft pulling the trigger early on some announcements, could some type of collaborative announcement come out? Just like a, hey, we are in the prototype stages of a new Fallout game by Obsidian. I mean, or in Exile. It would be a showstopper. I'm not even kidding. It would be a fucking showstopper. That would rattle the industry. There are so many Fallout channels that sort of like stagnated after Fallout 4 released that would be revived. I mean, Fallout 4 was, I call it a career game. And if you played your cards right, I'm not like tooting my own horn too much here, but I think I managed to transition relatively well over time. It took me 4 years when you think about it. Three really, now that I think about it a little bit more. But you know, that transition was tough for a lot of people, and some didn't really dig themselves out of it. And so right now, when I kind of peruse the content from Bethesda creators, it's myself, Juicehead, CamelWorks, and Fudge Muppet. Those are kind of the main ones that Oxhorn's still around. Those are the ones that kind of come to mind, but it's not as bombastic as it once was, where there were creators literally everywhere talking Fallout. And if New Vegas 2 is announced, that would be alongside, I mean, that's the thing, because if you have Elder Scrolls 6, New Vegas 2, like, those two games could easily line up to be, I call them the next Cyberpunk level of hype and attention. New Vegas 2 has been a joke for years, man. There were rumors when I used to pick up those stupid ass grain of salt articles. You know, there were rumors back in 2015, 2014. Like, I would just, you know, because that was when we were like really hungry for Fallout. And I think even afterwards, there were some grain of salt articles that I would talk about Fallout remasters. I mean, that's the money right there, is they're sitting on Fallout. But anyway, I don't want to get too off track with when we're talking about Starfield, but I do feel like Bethesda and Xbox have to know, we got to announce a project between us collaboratively or a cross brand project that shows the future of our work together, whether that's Starfield or an announcement of like a remaster of Fallout 3. I mean, I don't know why, maybe it's just the hype kind of winning me over, but you know, Bethesda's got some support studios that are working on stuff that have yet to really unveil that. We don't know if they're supporting, say, Starfield. That's the thing. I know Starfield's all hands on deck, but I don't know how extensively it is. Where are they taking every support studio and putting them on Starfield? Is all of the Bethesda Game Studios teams, are they all working on Starfield? That is the main question mark for me. So one of my bits of speculation was Bethesda Game Studios Montreal doing some type of remaster of Fallout 3, re-release of Fallout 3 in New Vegas. Because if you combine that with a Starfield reveal and then the announcement of a cross-brand Fallout New Vegas 2, we'll just call it, which is like the new Skyrim 2, by the way. I hate it, but it's the only thing we can call it. Because if you start calling it Fallout New Orleans, that's just completely like poorly representing what exactly we're trying to talk about, which is be another Fallout game from Obsidian. But yeah, back to Starfield. I would say keep your eye on the rumor mill. Keep your eye on the channel, of course. As I hear more, I'll share more. The one thing with my sources, I don't like to be the fire starter sometimes. I have been, like I said, with KOTOR I was, and with Starfield I was. But if I hear specific details and stuff, that's not my place to announce. Like, the expectation of a date and whatnot and the reveals, I think that's all fair play. But it's not my job to ruin the hard work of a team and say, like, hey, there's going to be this building mini game and there's going to be this spaceship flying and this and that. And by the way, I don't know, but I'm just saying it's not my duty to do that, nor have I heard anything like that. I'm just going based off what we saw in the screenshots. But obviously, we do not want to end up in the Jason Schreier territory of being blacklisted by Bethesda. So for now, that's all I've got for Starfield. Just keep your eyes peeled. There will be more, of course, and I imagine if Bethesda continues to be the creature of habit they are, sometime in May, we will start to see the Starfield Twitter account come to life. So remember this show, just saying. All right, let's go ahead and kick it on over to PlayStation. So PlayStation, they had a moment where they're like, quick, buy something, just buy anything. And so they bought Evo. They bought the fighting game championship tournament. This was clearly a move to bolster their fighting game community, where PlayStation has and always shall be, most likely, thanks to their beautiful controllers, the dominant fighting game console. And I think it's smart of PlayStation to really shore up the front there. And I think it's good that they're doing that, because I will never, ever, 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 ever think of buying a fighting game and then go, oh yeah, let me get that on Xbox. Unless it's like a Ultimate Ninja Storm or a My Hero One's Justice. Like, it is a face button type of fighter. There is no D-pad kind of movements and stuff. Don't get me wrong, I dig the Series X controller a lot. In a lot of ways, do prefer it to the DualSense, just by pure comfort, by the way. I think functionality speaking, DualSense is far more impressive. But yeah, when I look at the fighting games on Xbox, I played Battle for the Grid, the Power Rangers game, through Game Pass. I remember playing that and just going like, man, this game doesn't feel great to play on this controller. And I do not like to do fighting games on an analog stick. I think that feels super weird. So PlayStation buying Evo and being like, yeah, we're the dominant fighting game platform. We're going to own this thing. This is ours. Sounds like a good move. Or I should say Sony. Sony bought it. Seems like a good move to me. They'll continue to allow people to play on other hardware for their fighting games. So you'll still see like Smash tournaments and whatnot. And I think that's all well and good. So Sony made this purchase. I think it's smart given their ecosystem and kind of the work that they have done on the fighting game community, and how they continue to represent it very well. On the other end, once again, this seemed like a response, not a responsive. I mean, Carrick and Mike Williams were on with me for Defining Duke, and they both disagreed. But to me, this seemed like a reactionary announcement. So Jade Raymond introduces Haven, a new Montreal-based independent studio. It's been a strange and difficult past 12 months. Pandemic, social injustice, and job elimination have impacted many of my closest friends, family, and coworkers. All of these factors, paired with an inability to see friends and family face-to-face, lulled me into a kind of self-reflective cocoon where I had to ask myself some tough questions about what really matters. I've been making games for a long time, over 25 years now. I've had the opportunity to lead the creation of two highly successful original IPs and build multiple teams and studios from the ground up. Some of these adventures have been more successful than I could have ever imagined, and others less so, of course, referring to Stadia. Several people have asked me recently, quote, after all of these experiences, do you still want to be in the games industry, end quote. The answer is always an unwavering yes. The games industry is where I belong. Whether it's playing Settlers of Catan, did I butcher that, by the way? with my kids, or Valheim with my team, games continue to bring me joy. There's a way to relax, connect, and share experiences with people I care about, and the act of making games is in many ways even more fulfilling. Getting to bring together experts across so many different creative fields, from music composers to concept artists to new programmers, yes, programmers are creative too, which, yeah, they are, into a perfectly synced orchestra that delivers new worlds for players to explore, for me, there's nothing more fulfilling or rewarding I can imagine doing. As I took stock of my career over the last few years and started to think about what to do next, I came to a very simple conclusion. I need to get back to what I love doing most, and do so in a way that gives our team the freedom to explore, inspire, and create. And so today I'm announcing Haven, an independent studio where many of the talented game developers I've worked with for years and love dearly are coming together to do what we are most passionate about. It's time for us to refocus on games in a place where we can practice our crafts without any barriers or impediments. So we want to create worlds where players can escape, have fun, express themselves, and find community. We want to pour our passion into a project. We want to make something wondrous for people to experience, because we believe in the power of games to bring joy to people's lives, and Sony does too. Their commitment to excellence is unmatched. It's why I couldn't be happier for their backing and support. Together, we want to create games that are a haven, hence the name, for players, and we want to build a studio that is a haven for developers. So while we don't have many details to announce today, I want the PlayStation community to know that Haven Studios is already hard at work at an unannounced IP. We can't wait to show you more. So within the last couple of months, Google Stadia wind down all of their first-party studios, so this first unannounced IP is likely just a, and I'm not saying it to be mean, just a figment of the imagination as it stands. They are working on something and it'll likely be many, many years before we see it, like 3-4 years possibly. But this is great. I like when PlayStation does this. They came and saved Kojima when he was clearly in a tough spot with Konami. They extracted him. They set up Kojima Studios with him. They helped make Death Stranding. Yeah, Death Stranding may not be everybody's cup of tea, but I'm happy it exists. I'm happy in a space where we see these big, explosive film or shooters. I was going to say Michael Bay film. These kind of familiar open world titles. I'm happy that something like Death Stranding exists because I do think this is a game that shakes things up. And so I like that PlayStation has yet again gone out and said, hey, Jade, you've had a really rough go these last couple of months, right? Like, she's been at multiple studios. Nothing could get off the ground. She's kind of running off the pedigree of her work on Assassin's Creed, which was strong. She hasn't made or released anything in a while where it's actually quite, I don't want to sound, I'm not saying it in a mean way. It's just fascinating that her name has remained relevant. It's a testament to her work. And so I give PlayStation huge kudos for their ability to get devs that are in tough positions into their wheelhouse, give them an opportunity, and in this case, allow studio to be created, which is going to chase their own vision. Sounds very similar to what they did with Kojima. And once again, while Death Stranding looks very unappealing to me, and if it finally comes on Game Pass like it was rumored to, based off, of course, Phil Spencer's background, by the way, I will give it a try, but still, the fact that it existed was actually awesome. And so, same thing here with Haven. We know nothing about it. Jade Raymond hasn't released the game in a while. She's gone through a tough go. And so, I think PlayStation was almost a saving grace here. And I think this is a great thing because these people remember this stuff. So, Jade may end up becoming very loyal to PlayStation. So, this is a savvy move, picking people up while they're down. I mean, it's, of course, compassionate, but I'm saying it's also just a smart business move. Like, give the person who's clearly got talent or has shown they have talent the opportunity to make something. You have the money to fork it forward. Obviously, they don't have the Microsoft levels of money, but they have enough money to say, hey, let's set up Jade. Let's get ourselves another exclusive studio. This is a quiet way. Well, I shouldn't say exclusive studio. That may be leaping a little bit, but it, more than likely an exclusive game. This is a very exciting way for PlayStation to kind of set up for the future to get some new ideas in there, some new lifeblood in there, because they are doing pretty common third-person open-world styles of all different slices, and they've been fantastic. But something different for something like Jade would be really nice to see. And I think it would give that spice of variety that we're looking for. But typically, we've seen through Assassin's Creed that those were all third-person games. So maybe it remains the same. We will see on that. But I think this is a great move by PlayStation. And overall, between Evo and Jade Raymond, I mean, some interesting moves that I got to say I did not see coming. And Evo, I have less to say on, not because I don't want to say more, but because I kind of am confused by the notion of the move outside of bolstering their fighting game community, which was insane already. And now this is it, man. They've locked it in. They're like, we are the fighting game platform. So I think it's a very demonstrative move to say, like, Xbox will not take this from us. No one will take this from us. And I think that should be the case. They are the best controller to play fighting games on. And I've always associated fighting games with PlayStation. Ever since I was a kid, I never played fighting games on anything but PlayStation. So PlayStation making this move makes sense. And then Haven Studios, I think that's a good, classy move. And of course, they're not handing out money to be classy. Don't misinterpret me, please, for the love of God. It's just that I think it's a good move. It looks good for them. But this is also something that can lead to a really good exclusive for them that diversifies even more. So good job by PlayStation and Sony. Looking forward to seeing what exactly they have in store for us down the line as we wait for all their other exclusives like God of War and Horizon, as well as Returnal and Ratchet and Clank. A lot of good stuff coming from PlayStation. Excited for them in this summer. All right, next on our list, Gotham Knights. Oh, man. So this was one that I was really looking forward to. I was really excited about Gotham Knights. And so Gotham Knights has been delayed into 2022. There was a picture posted on the Twitter account of Gotham Knights. It says Gotham Knights will now launch worldwide in 2022. Quote, we are giving the game more time to deliver the best possible experience for players. Thank you to our amazing fans for your tremendous support of Gotham Knights. We look forward to showcasing more of the game in the coming months, end quote. So likely indicating that Warner Brothers will be doing some type of showcase again, kind of like they did with the FanDome back in August of last year. Maybe not the same exact thing. Maybe we see it in a different light. But yeah, this is one of those things that actually a buddy of mine called. We were actually on Discord the other night, and he was just like, "Yeah, man, I think Gotham Knights is delayed." And you can tell usually because there's a silence. Silence is always the loudest sound in gaming. So we knew for a fact that Prince of Persia was going to be delayed. They're like, "It's coming in March." What? It was dead quiet up until February. They're like, "Yeah, it's coming in March." No, it's not. So for those who forgot, Gotham Knights is this co-op online take on the open world Batman games that we've seen in the past. Now, it's not games as a service. It's not like Avengers. I made a whole video on that already. It's not like those. It is a action RPG. It's not, when I say RPG, it doesn't mean like deep choice and consequence. It's just it's an action game with stats. And it looks in a lot of ways actually better systemically than what we saw with Avengers. But you can play online with one other person. So you can, they say the Batman is dead, which I don't know. I think they're going to go for it. But they had the likes of Red Hood, Robin, Nightwing, Batgirl. You could play as all these characters. And I thought this game looked friggin' awesome. So I got to say, I'm a little bummed out by this news here. But when they said that it was coming out in 2021, I don't know. I kind of bought into that now that I think about it, because I felt like that made a lot of sense. So they announced it in August and they're like, yeah, it's coming out summer 2021. So the fact that they just didn't even put a date on it, they just said it's coming in 2022, most likely means they have another date in mind. They may be waiting for that new trailer. But yeah, Gotham Knights sadly delayed. Not a lot more you can add to it other than the game looks awesome, in my opinion, and I hope to see more of it soon like they say they are, and that it doesn't get stuck in development hell, because I think it's they need to get this out, I think, before Suicide Squad. Because I don't think that's an overlap that Warner Brothers is interested in. Get Gotham Knights out first. And apparently, Suicide Squad was next year, which that's getting delayed out of that year probably. That's what that tells me. Unless maybe, because Rocksteady, then again, you know what? I could be speaking a little bit uninformed on that one. Rocksteady hasn't released anything since Arkham Knight. When did Arkham Knight come out? Rocksteady's last game? Hold on. When was Rocksteady's last game? I think it had to have been 2015's Arkham Knight. So I don't know, maybe it's further along than we think. Maybe they waited a while. I mean, they did do DLC for Arkham Knight, but I'm saying maybe they waited a while and the next gen hardware kit started to come out and they started making something exclusively for that, or they started making something then transferred over to the next gen. I don't know, it's just not normal for a studio to be quiet for that many years. Yeah, I got to say, with Gotham Knights, I do hope it gets out in a timely manner so it doesn't get swamped by that game. So we'll see how all of that goes. But for now, that's the latest on Gotham Knights. Not much more to add on that one. So let's talk about the Xbox Indie Showcase. So there was a rumored showcase for a while. This was something I covered on the channel, that Xbox had a big indie or a big showcase coming at some point in time. The rumor was originally the 23rd and then it got bumped back to the 26th. So Xbox announced on their newswire that they're teaming up for the first time with Twitch for an indie showcase. So it's indie showcase. This may not sound exciting, but there are some really cool stuff there. So they say, "We at ID at Xbox, the independent and digital games publishing program for Xbox, love indie games. It's in our blood. Technically, it's also in our name. Turns out our friends at Twitch also love indie games. When we found that out, we thought we got a collab. So I'm thrilled to announce the first Twitch Gaming Showcase ID at Xbox." It says, "ID at Xbox, Twitch Gaming, and more than 100 games from independent developers based all over the world." The what? They say, "We're featuring tons of independent titles, brand new game announcements from developers and publishers such as Drinkbox Studios, Curve Digital, Devolver Digital, Dear Villagers, and others. During the showcase, we'll debut new trailers and gameplay for more than 25 games, including Second Extinction, The Ascent, Wild at Heart, Void Train, XO1, an update on Stalker 2, and many more. We'll also be making announcements about independent titles coming to Xbox and Xbox Game Pass. Community favorite Twitch streamers will host the showcase and conduct interviews with developers, take fan questions, and maybe even drop some game codes. The when, set your reminders for Friday, March 26th. So this will be next Friday as I record this show at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Note that this occurs in the window where the time has changed in the U.S., but not other parts of the world, so plan accordingly. For example, the showcase will be at 16 in the U.K. and not 17 as it usually would be. The where, you can find it on twitch.tv/twitchgaming or twitch.tv/Xbox. And the why is because we, Xbox and Twitch Gaming, love indies and supporting independent developers. Once again, this is going to be on twitch.tv/Xbox at 9 a.m. Pacific time. All right, so, my throat's getting so dry and I forgot to get some water, so I'm just like, oh, this is bad. And somebody say, why don't you just go get up and get some water? The problem with that is that I don't have water here, and the faucet here is shooting out some nasty-looking water. So unless I want to get some type of deadly disease, I have to sit here and have dry mouth. So with that, let's talk about games. All right. So updates on 100 games, which is really cool. Showing off 100 games. And then here's the key here for Xbox is they're showing off Second Extinction, which is console exclusive. The Ascent is console exclusive, or Xbox exclusive in general. XL1 is supposed to be an update on Soccer 2 is very exciting. So yeah, this is something that was rumored for a while, and I'm very much looking forward to this. This is going to be a big thing for Xbox, because what it does is kind of like what PlayStation did with State of Play and what Nintendo did with their own Direct. This is going to set the stage for some of the smaller third-party and independent titles that Xbox is releasing exclusively. So definitely keep your eye on this if you're interested in that ecosystem. There are going to be some really cool-looking games, in my opinion, based off what we've seen on these titles, by the way. Not just me knowing something or reading. We've seen a lot of these games in action. And so I'm very excited to see, especially The Ascent. The Ascent looks very cool. So I'm looking forward to learning more on that. Hopefully a release date for those. And what this will likely do is decorate the rest of the calendar with surrounding pieces for Xbox as they get their bigger titles out the door. I'm curious how independent studios are doing with COVID, because some of them, like Moon Studios, have already worked globally since their inception. Like they made both Ori games not together. Like they had someone in Canada, someone in Australia. Like they were just all over the place. They made these beautiful looking games. So I wonder how much indies are affected. And the reason I bring that up is because maybe they can bring out their games in a manner which will help Xbox as they try to figure out what's going on with Halo and what's going on with Starfield. I do hope over time, though, Xbox starts to get early year type of things going. Like they did have a Gears Tactics in the summer. That was really cool to see. And I think the plan is to get some of these smaller games nabbed up and put them out exclusively on the console. So I'm looking forward to learning more about this. I am going to be streaming this event. So that'll be at 12 Eastern time. I'll definitely be streaming this, reacting to it. And of course, I don't think I'll be making a video on it by any means. But I definitely will be talking about it on Defining Duke as well as this show more. Because I think that as the pandemic rages on and we start to kind of age back into a little bit of normalcy ever so slowly, games are going to be delayed for now. And what's interesting to see is how people will choose to fill up their game time. And it's either go back into your backlog or something like this where you have the opportunity to look at an indie game. Like, why do you think Loop Hero is doing so well? Valheim, obviously they are great games, but they're doing well because they have the window and the conversation to be able to promote their game, for people to try them out. A lot of it, like Valheim, I feel like that was just because it was a polished for the type of game it was when it released, but also it's because it had a chance for people to hear about it. People were playing it and it built up. Streamers were playing. That was awesome to see. Same thing here that we're seeing a little bit with what's it called? I am blanking out right now. Valheim and Loop Hero. Loop Hero selling over 500,000 copies. Once again, that needed that window of time. Loop Hero is a game that comes, people go, this is cool, and then you move on. But the fact that for multiple weeks, Loop Hero has appeared inside of my Twitter feed and on websites and in playthroughs and on my channel shows two things. Number one, how dead things are right now. But number two, the opportunity that indies are having. So if you're an indie dev, they're in a really spectacular time right now because they have the chance to put something out there and get a conversation. All right, so sorry about this dramatic cut. It said that I ran out of memory for my computer. So that's all I really had to say anyway. pardon me, about the Xbox Indie Showcase. But ultimately, just looking forward to reacting to it, seeing all the games that are there. And I think it's also a good move for Microsoft to sustain some momentum. I apologize in advance, by the way, because now the timestamps are going to be tough, because what happens is, as of course the timer goes up on my Audacity, I would just look at the time frame, get a good ballpark range of when the conversation would end, write it down. But now it's at 40 seconds, it says, and that is definitely not where we're at, where my last known timestamp was about a hour and 11 minutes in, and then the clock shut down after that. So I'm going to have to ballpark it a little bit. So if they seem a little bit off, I'm going to try my best. But it's already 8 p.m. now on Friday. So let's go ahead. Let's shift into your patron questions, because I was thinking about the Square Enix show highlights, and I realize I have nothing good to say. I really don't. I don't care about Avengers. I'm not as big of a Life is Strange fan as, say, Carrick would be. And so I'm not really interested in looking into True Colors outside of the fact that Deck Nine is doing it. So it seems like Don't Nod's working on something else. Hopefully a Vampyr sequel. That'd be cool. But anyway, outside of that, you know, looking forward to Forspoken. Looks solid. But nothing I can add of depth, because I knew that showcase would be bad and not interesting. And in a lot of ways it was. You know, when they were promoting mobile game announcements, that's when I went, okay, they don't got enough. But they're going to do another, they said. So that's cool. But I was originally going to talk about that, but I apologize. I'm going to retract it. I don't have anything good to say, and I don't have anything expansive, more importantly, to say that is of quality. So I'd rather just dive into your patron questions. It'll keep a lot of things a little more organized. And by the way, for those who are patrons, just know that we will be doing a monthly Q&A in the coming week as our replacement with Extra Slice of Ham. All right. So here we go. Grimblade's our first write-in. With the constant discussion on studio acquisitions, I wanted to provide some unfounded speculation. What if Microsoft were to purchase Crytek? Crytek is a large studio of approximately 300 developers, but they are known for their engine, not their games, which have been mostly mediocre. Crytek made Rise, Son of Rome exclusively for Xbox. Arkane used CryEngine as their base for the new engine in Prey, which I actually just learned that during a Digital Foundry video, so it's funny you bring that up. And id found a Frankfurt studio that works exclusively on engine development with a team made up of mostly CryEngine veterans. There is some history there. Add to this several past reports of financial issues, and you seem to have a recipe for the type of studio that may seek acquisitions or partnerships to stay afloat. Yeah, they do seem like the kind of ripe acquisition, whether it's PlayStation, Xbox does have some history, Embracer Group even. A lot of people count Embracer Group out because they don't own a console, but maybe even... Did EA publish Crysis? Am I going crazy? Hold on. Crysis Publisher. Was it EA? It was. EA is at least mentioned on this list here of publishers. Maybe EA nabs them up. They bought Codemasters. They've got DICE, so they do have like. I'm thinking like Crysis, like they do have first person shooting stuff. But Rise, Son of Rome, I would love to see a sequel of. I know they'll never do it, but that game was awesome. I don't mind this at all, because it seems like Phil really liked the tech with Bethesda's acquisition. He talked a lot about id Tech. A lot of people don't talk about Orion. Another part of Bethesda that I think kind of flew under the radar in exchange for the IP discussions, which makes complete sense. I get why it did. But I could see a company really seeing something exciting about that. And if you're an Embracer Group and you could take your indie studios and have them mess with the CryEngine, that would be really neat to see, like AA teams working with CryEngine. Of course, you know, an EA would be great for this too. I shouldn't say great, actually, but I mean, like, it would make sense. Crytek was in the talks of acquisition or going under or something like that for a while, I thought. And I'm actually shocked that they're still around, because it must be something with their engine, because I don't see them releasing many games. But I remember Crysis 3 was like a really big deal. And I remember playing it not being remotely impressed, outside of course, its visuals. But even then, I was like, I mean, it's a good looking game, but who cares? So I thought this was some good food for thought here, Grim. I really do like this, and I totally see it as something plausible. And with the history of Arcane, maybe. But I don't know why I don't feel like Microsoft would be the ones who pulls the trigger on that. Because I think Microsoft's interested in inheriting studios with massive potential. And I think Bethesda was one that was not going under, but I feel like Bethesda was one that was having trouble and they were really struggling. And then Xbox stepped in at the right time to allow them to kind of go back to their potentially more creative ways. Where Crytek, I don't really get that vibe. They just sort of fell off the map. They did Crysis Remastered. And that was it. I don't even know if that was by Crytek, to be quite frank. Because that released on Switch and whatnot. Logan B is our next write-in. A simple question this week. What is the first video game you guys have ever played? So my first video game was Pokemon Blue. This was a game that I discovered on a lost Game Boy. I remember finding it out in my backyard and playing it and just having no idea what it was. But I liked it. And then eventually I got my own, and I actually remember in my old living room, for those of you watching the video, think of the room I'm in right now. It was a nice square room, and then it was tinier, and then there was a recliner I'd sit in and play my Game Boy Color. I remember to my left, there was a little basket, and I remember I had like these clean boxed copies of the game. Like, I took good care of, I had Super Mario Advanced in there at one point. I remember I had, of course, Pokemon Blue was in there. I had the boxes for all these games. And I don't know if anyone's looked up how much Pokemon Blue is complete with its manual and stuff, but oh my God, so much money now. So I cringe a little bit at the thought of that. I'm like, oh my God. But at the same time, it's really hard to keep those types of games in good condition. I mean, the Game Boy Advance boxes, if you get a good complete in box copy, take good care of that shit, because that can get dinged up fast. Like, even when you're putting, if you're trying to keep good quality control of even the corners, when I slipped, I made sure to experiment first with one that was less expensive. I got Dynasty Warriors Advance complete in box because I dug that game a lot as a kid. And when I was putting it in the plastic casing and I was figuring it out, you can actually bend the corners putting into certain plastic casings. So you got to be very careful when you take care of those things. But Pokemon Blue was my first game played, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And of course, I moved on to Oddworld Munch's Odyssey. It was really my first game I understood and I got and I played and I beat. Like, I remember that, you know, tit for tat. Like, I just went through that whole thing with my dad, and we had to like strategically plan out how was Abe going to get the scrubs to the escape portals. How are we going to have the Mudokons attack this one, the Mudokons with the tomahawks, I forgot they had a name, but like get them to attack, like how, when are we going to attack, when's the right time, all that stuff. And you know, it's easier now, but when I was a kid, it was this very big thinking game, and so it was so much fun. I have a lot of love for Oddworld in my heart. All right, let's keep rolling on here. Quattro Quattro is our next write-in. Hey guys, do you think that Persona 5 or 5 Royal is ever going to come to Switch? I can't help but feel like it's the perfect fit for the laying in bed genre we'd love to have on Switch. Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. I'm going to take that, the laying in bed genre. Do you think Nintendo or Atlas is treating Strikers as the Persona representation for the Switch? Thanks, love the show, and I'm happy to join the Patreon squad. Welcome, first of all, thank you. But yeah, when it comes to the laying in bed genre, I number one do think Persona, and there's a laundry list of games that fit really well, but yeah, Persona is a great fit. Atlas is definitely looking into it for sure. They know the ports are going to make them good money. We now see SMT3 Nocturne Remaster is coming to Steam. Now I don't run away with 4chan leaks at all, but the same person who confirmed, hey, that the PC version of SMT3 is happening did say that Persona 5 Royal, Switch, Steam, Xbox, Game Pass, don't know when it's going to be announced, but soon. Next Etrian Odyssey project on Switch is scheduled for H2 2022 right now. Project ReFantasy is supposedly internally delayed through some development troubles, and SMT5 info tomorrow. So this will be the ultimate test, because they're saying that there's going to be more info on SMT5 tomorrow, late 2021, barring delays, which this was posted Thursday. They were correct about one part, so I don't want to give this too much credit. I really don't, because it would be false information otherwise. But When it comes to Persona, yeah, they're definitely, Atlas is embracing the idea of bringing these games to other consoles. And so I think Switch makes a lot of sense. It's made a lot of sense for a while. And I think a lot of people have thought very one or the other, like it's got to be Switch, because the narrative for a while was Persona on Switch. And they were like, we can't do it on Switch. But people are still saying, do Persona on Switch. And then now we're hearing Persona on Xbox. And we haven't heard, no, you can't. So instead of doing one or the other, I think they're going to do both. I don't know if Strikers is going to be that representation. I think the idea is like, okay, the series is big enough. Now we're going to start making multi-plat releases. So it's not just going to be like Persona 5 and 5 Royal where it's only on PlayStation, which is huge for PlayStation. You know, any PlayStation fan should be considering themselves lucky. That is a Persona 5 Royal is my favorite game of the generation. So like, yeah, that having that on your console is a major win. And I would love to see it go other places and have more people on our show be able to play it, check it out. And I do think Royal is a little more accessible because while it's so well paced, despite it being like a 130-hour game, and I know that sounds ridiculous, I promise you when I say it's so well paced and it's a masterclass in keeping a story interesting, because there is no low point. There isn't. I'm just sorry. There isn't. There's points that I don't like as much as others, but there is no low point, in my opinion, in that game. And to do that over the course of 130 hours is very difficult. Just the gameplay systems work really well. The hubs are interesting to explore. The gameplay is phenomenal. And then, of course, the story is masterful. All of it just comes together. Really worthwhile adventure. And I do think that time frame is a little bit easier to swallow if you can say, hey, I can take this on the go, or lay in bed. Lay in bed is a huge one, right? Before you wind down at night, having a little Persona 5 Royal would be fire. I get worried because Atlas can be weird. I get worried that they'll do just Persona 5, but I imagine they know better by now. I imagine they do. The reason I say that is because, like, I know that people are saying, oh, well, they created a sequel to 5 because Royal was still in development and they kept it a secret and stuff. It's like, that was stupid, in my opinion. I love Strikers in a lot of ways, but I think it was stupid to not make a sequel to Royal because Royal was way better than 5. Oh, before I get on a tangent, I'll spare you all. Let's move on to Carlton Dexter. Hello there. After watching both your reviews on the Outer Worlds DLC, I had a question about your review process. What part do you start writing first? What part of the review do you think is the most important part at helping someone make up their mind on the game? I'm normally sure if I want to get a game before watching a review, but I like to watch a few from different sources just in case there is something a few people pick up on. Another question. While you might have had it before, do you like to listen to anything while playing games? I normally have music playing or a YouTube video in the background while playing most games and pause it when a cutscene plays. So I'll answer that in a second. Carlton, as for your first question about my review process, I can't speak for Carrick, but I will say for myself, what I tend to do is, I've said it before in videos, you'll see me take out my Vault Boy notebook and I'll slap it around as a joke. I will have that open with a pen kind of clicked open, and as things happen where I want to make note of it, I'll write it all down. And then what I'll do is, I'm a very bullet point oriented person. That's my line of thinking. I don't like full scripts. I think that shit sucks, because a lot of my best things I've said in videos, and a lot of the, like, for example, you know how I mentioned that future, like when Phil Spencer talked about legacy games, I think he's also talking future in the sake of Deathloop and Ghostwire Tokyo. That was not a part of my bullet points. That was not a part of my script. It's because I had bullet points and I wasn't telling myself what to say on camera. I had that sort of free flow and I was able to think beyond my script and pull that into my video and go, you know what, this is actually a good idea. Let's keep talking about it. So I like to write in bullet points quite a bit and keep it like that for my videos. So what I do is, as I go through the game, I'll just write notes on things that happen, like a story pacing moment, something feeling off, something feeling good, what exactly feels good, right? The question, and this is going to sound stupid, but I always say what or why. So when I'm writing something, like, I'll go, oh, I like that. Why? Oh, I like that. What was it? That's what I like to do. So when I was reviewing the Outer Worlds DLC and I was looking at the amplifier. Why is my memory is so shot lately? I don't know what's been going on. But when I was looking at the evidence scanner, we'll just call it for now, I was like, oh, this is cool. Why is it cool? Because it's expanding your role-playing options while also tapping into the whole noir-themed detective-style adventure you're on. And that's so cool. So that line of thinking is what I tend to do, and I'll write down all these bullet points, but so they're not scattered and I can collect them all. What I will organize is I will then make a separate note sheet on my iPad, and I'll put story, it's simple, story, gameplay, sound/voice, verdict. And literally what I'll do is just take those notes. I'll transfer them over exactly as I wrote them. Maybe revise a couple of things, add some things if I think of them. So I'll have a story, gameplay, sound, and then I will have my verdict. And it'll just say buy, rent, pass, wait for a sale, and then in parentheses how much money I'd wait for, that type of thing. So my review process, it's very simple. And I just believe information is king. So I think, you know, knowing what is happening and why it's happening or how it's happening is way more important than an elegant vocabulary or a beautifully flowing script. Like, you know, there's a degree of imperfection to the process. And I think that's what makes it work really well. And by that, I mean, not imperfection in the way of my critique, but it's not going to be this beautiful piece as a love letter to the video game. It's going to be critiquing it, breaking it down. What is it? What's happening? What works? What doesn't? And how much do I love or dislike certain things about it? And what aspects stand out? I mean, there's more to it than that, of course, but that's a general look at how I start my review process. And, you know, when it comes to the, what point do you think is the most important, or I'm sorry, you said, what part of the review do you think is the most important part at helping someone make up their mind on the game? I don't know that. That's why I go all out on information without spoiling. So I will give you all the story details in the sense of how long it is, how interesting it was, what clicked with me for it, those type of things. And then for gameplay, I'll go all out on what the systems are, how interesting they were, how familiar they were. Same thing with story tropes, and just break it down that way, because I know some people are more story-oriented. I know some people are more gameplay-oriented. And I'll, of course, reviews are glorified opinions, so I'll make sure people know, like, I'm more of a gameplay guy, or I was more of a story guy. For me, I'm just in the middle at this point. I used to be more of a story person, but now as time has gone on and games have become more fun, like, I think of Astral Chain. The fact that Astral Chain was one of my games of the year, like, number one game of the year, that is crazy to think about. That is actually insane. Astral Chain, I thought it had a solid story, but I loved its gameplay so much, man. I thought that game was fantastic. So, you know, it just shows that if a game's fun enough, it can be your game of the year. Like, Doom Eternal was my top five last year. So, yeah, I do value things, but it also goes from experience to experience. So, in something like Doom, of course, the most important part I want to nail in my review is what is the locomotion of the gameplay like? Where something like, if I were to review What Remains of Edith Finch, I would talk about its storytelling, its tools, its length, those types of things. So hopefully that helped, Carlton. As for your second question, do I listen to anything while I play games? No. I can get distracted very easily in that regard, and so I do not fuck around with that. Know-it-all's up next. Did you guys play any online Flash games? And if so, what were some of your favorites? Mine would have to be Stick RPG. You play as a stick man in a small city. You can work, gamble, get in bar fights, sell cocaine, and trade cigarettes to children for a skateboard. Nothing but good times. Online Flash games. Yes, I did. There was a online... I mean, E-Bombs World was like the home to all Flash games. So yeah, I spent a lot of time as a kid on E-Bombs World. But, oh my God. There was an online Flash game that was a Stickman shooter. It was a third-person, like, top-down Stickman online shooter. I played that a lot. Like, I don't know why. Like, my buddies were all into it, and we played that a ton. I don't remember what it was called. I also played, oh my God, it was a Dragon something. Hold on. Let's see if we can find it. Dragon Flash game. Let's see here. Dragon Fable. Oh my God, is this still around? Wow. Wow, 2021. Wow. Yeah, Dragon Fable. Let me see. Holy smokes. That is crazy. Yeah, I played a lot of Dragon Fable as a kid. I remember going on a trip and bringing my laptop with me and actually being able to play this, and that was such a cool feeling because I was really hooked to this game. It's a fully animated role-playing game. And, man, wow, crazy this still exists, crazy. It must still have an audience. I wonder if there's, like, reviews, Dragon Fable review. I'm just curious if someone's actually reviewed this recently. Indie Ranger, May 2020 is one thumbs up. Yeah, I understand why. Not a lot of people are probably talking about it or playing it, but. Wow, very, very, very big throwback for me on that one. Wow. Yeah, here's a review. MMO Huts, 2009. Yeah, I dug the hell out of this game as a kid. I wouldn't go back and play it now, but that was definitely one. Thank you, Know-It-All, for the trip down memory lane. Vault 101, guys, up next. After all this talk about Xbox killing it with Bethesda's deal and with the recent news of Outriders Day 1 Game Pass, I'm curious what PlayStation will do to keep the loyalty of their customers. I'm now struggling if I should get an Xbox first or go with PS5 next year. Game Pass is just too appealing right now, and I'm really excited for the future of Xbox. I agree. It's definitely exciting, and I think what you're seeing right now is PlayStation's going to have to stick to their guns. They can't get too reactionary. What we're seeing them do is do a play-at-home thing. So you're seeing them add games just completely free-to-play and continue to do that, and that's great, and they should still do that just to make sure that people are happy. But keep an eye on the long run. All I'm going to say is if you're going to get a Series S and you're going to get Game Pass, like, you can get that for... You'll be paying $35 a month for a little bit of time until your console's fully paid off if you do the all-access plan, and then you can just pay for Game Pass. And I don't know. I just feel like an Xbox is so affordable. As long as you have like a decent income, you know, where you can afford $20-$30 a month, that even if you don't get Game Pass right away, it's so affordable and it would benefit you a lot because Game Pass is going to continue to pay dividends, I believe. So what PlayStation is going to do, I think they're doing it right. I don't think PlayStation needs to get too knee-jerk and reactive. You know, they just bought Evo. They just opened up a studio with Jade Raymond. And they have these great exclusives coming, great looking exclusives, I should say, from Returnal to Ratchet to Horizon to God of War. And so there will be a degree of familiarity there because all PS4 was these brand new ideas and reimaginings. And now it's a continuation of that with sequels. And so all these studios are kind of tightly locked in. So I think there is going to be a little bit of restlessness amongst PlayStation gamers. But that's why it's so great that Game Pass is available in so many places. Smart TV apps are coming, streaming to your phones, PC. Of course, consoles are a little bit cheaper to buy into. So, you know, I think Xbox has the right idea. Because I think what they want is not for you to feel like you have to own either a PlayStation or an Xbox, but that you can get your PlayStation and then get your Xbox for very cheap or access their main library of first-party stuff for cheap and make sure it's accessible. All right, Natural Calamity's up next. Question. When you play creative character games, are you the one to go lore friendly with names or batshit crazy with names? I try to go lore friendly as I can. In Skyrim, it's Ragnar Hammer, Fist the Brute of a Nord, or Zephyr Dark Sky, my sneaky dark elf. And how are you with creating them? Do you have to make them look decent for the next 60 hours, or are you full Ark Survival Evolved and make them look like something that just crawled out of your mom's creepy basement or creepy murderer basement? Or does their appearance matter very little to you? This is a great question. For me, it does matter. I spend a lot of time creating my character, but I'm not obsessive about it. So eventually I want to play the game, but I'll sit there for like 20, 30 minutes tops, and I will tinker with my character, especially if it's a game where you can see your character. Yeah, because it will be something that will not bug me where I'm like, oh, what am I doing? But it will bug me enough where I will notice things. I'll go, oh, man, like something's off there. Something's off there. I saw it again. One of my most proud character creations is you can look at some of my older Skyrim Rare videos is the wood elf I built because Skyrim had this kind of I'll take off my glasses for this. They had a face paint that went around your eyes and then it was a long red line. So it was like this long teardrop and my character just looked so fucking sick. I love face paint and I love elves and I think Skyrim just nailed it so properly and it made me feel great. So yeah, I like to make a character I'm proud of, male or female, doesn't matter. I'm just hyped to play as whomever. And then when it comes to naming, I like to be me for my first ever playthrough. After that, yeah, I'll do funny names. Like when I did my platinum trophy playthrough for Fallout 4, I did Mr. Platty Plays. Like that's typically my platinum playthrough name. But during my first playthrough, I will be Maddie. I don't feel comfortable being like, my name is Cerberus. You know, that's just, not that it's wrong. Not that you're doing anything wrong by saying that. I just don't like to. All right. Second question from Natural Calamity. Are you a lore buff? Like to stay true to the world and look on and try to really envelop yourself in the world? Or are you a heathen bringing in Spider-Man riding on top of Thomas the Tank Engine and Thomas shoots lasers from his eyes? So yeah, there's a certain point where I like to break the lore and add in these mods. I'm assuming you're talking about Skyrim. But when it comes to lore, I care enough to be invested. I don't care enough at times, not always, but at times, to get as pissed off as people do. The worst I saw was probably Fallout 4, because I do strictly remember a time where I made a video about Fallout 4 and the Midwest Brotherhood of Steel, and I speculated about what was it? It's been long enough where I'm starting to forget that. But I made a video talking about the Brotherhood of Steel in Fallout 4. And I remember speculating that it was someone from the Midwest. And it turns out that there were factions from the Midwest. And I based it off a flag. And you could see these in multiple parts of Tactics Brotherhood of Steel, which was semi-canon. And I remember a Reddit thread being made about me, about the lore, saying I was wrong. And then Bethesda themselves came out and said, we actually got the flag wrong in the trailer or in the promotion material or something like that. Or I think it was in the Tactics game, or they copied the wrong flag. But at the end of the day, I was not incorrect. But that was probably the most egregious moment of lore control I saw, was that I made a video talking about the return of a faction, which ended up being correct, and where the faction originated from, which also I believe ended up being correct. But someone tried to tell me I was wrong based off a flag that Bethesda got wrong. And it got painted on me. And I was like, I don't like that. Like, I don't like when people are so protective of a game universe that they'll attack others. To me, that, because the thread, I think, was titled, like, don't ever listen to Mr. Matty Plays or something like that. And I was like, what? Like, I'm right here. So what do you mean? Like, you don't got to always listen to me, but I was right on this. So let's pick a different one. Let's pick a different hill to die on. So yeah, definitely, I'm a lore buff in the sense of creating the universe, making sure there's continuity is the most important, right? Making sure things make sense and reflect that world that you are building. To me, yeah, lore buff in that way. And I care about things, you know, I don't want to see ridiculousness in my game worlds, but if I'm modding it in, sure. But when it comes to the actual world and someone putting time into it and creating something interesting, yeah, I want to see good continuity there. All right, we got two questions left, so let's finish this up. Unkempt Hawk is next. I've been thinking about the sequels, gents. Just playing The Outer Worlds after seeing Maddie and Carrick talk about the new DLC, and I'm already looking forward to more in this universe. With Avowed likely being in 2022/2023, I'm thinking Outer Worlds 2 could be a very long way off. Getting to my actual question, what is your ideal amount of time between entries in a series? As much as I want to see Elder Scrolls 6 or The Outer Worlds 2, I know the most important thing is waiting for these studios to produce a good game. So I'm down for waiting. Just wanted to pick your brains on this one. Hope you guys are having an above average day. Thank you. So for me, almost three, four hours. Yeah, right. Imagine that. Bethesda Game Studios dropping a new Flash game every 3 to 4 hours. 3-4 years. That seems right to me. It gives you enough time to make something, create something new, think about it a little bit more, expand upon it. I think once you hit the 5-year range, you are expecting something much grander. And then anything beyond that, it's like, oh boy, there's either something wrong. Kind of like how I feel about Suicide Squad, like, yeah, we're year six now. We haven't seen anything yet. Like, this is a little worrisome. Dev cycles are typically 4 years. So yeah, I think there's a reason for that, because if everything's moving like a well-oiled machine, it should be out within that 4 to 5 year top range. And so yeah, for me, the problem really is the developers, because you got these studios that want to flex their creative muscles. So they'll make all these interesting universes. And Obsidian is kind of in the rock star position where they're working on Grounded. And that did way better than I think they ever expected. And they're working on The Outer Worlds, which did really well. And people want to see more on a bigger budget. But now they're doing Avowed, which once that maybe does well, people have the chance of wanting more of that. And then maybe you get more of that through Elder Scrolls 6. But, you know, maybe people will finally catch on to what makes Pillars of Eternity click. And so you want to do more of that and solidify your own universe. But then what are The Outer Worlds 2? What of course, Fallout New Vegas 2 that we talked about at the beginning of all this? There's so much there, right? There's so much to dig into there with Obsidian, and a lot of companies have this problem. Of course, you know, Bethesda Game Studios is about to have it. Elder Scrolls has been dormant for a while outside of course, Elder Scrolls Online, which is solid. They still have Fallout, but now they're adding Starfield to the mix, and if Starfield's good, they already had enough trouble getting a new Elder Scrolls game out. And it's just one of those things where now they're going to have to balance these three IP, which is why I think Fallout's going to get tossed out to someone, and you're going to start to see more cross-brand collaboration, because these, I'm more about franchise dormancy. So I don't want franchises to be dead for a decade. I don't think that's right. I think that's actually poor management. So, and I'm talking about popular stuff. I don't think suddenly some other company should go make The Outer Worlds too. I think only Obsidian should, but something as popular as Elder Scrolls or Fallout, I do think Bethesda should be licensing that type of stuff out. That's just my interpretation, though. My personal ideal wait time, though, is about 4 years on Camp Talk. 4-3 years. Give him some time. If it's DLC, then maybe it'll add on an extra year. That's the other thing. Post-launch support can kind of push things back. Last question of the show, and then I need some water, man. Hi, Billy Mays here. It's been a while, so I just want to say I hope you're all in good health and in good spirits. Welcome back, Billy. Anyway, to my question. Would you rather have a Fallout game set in South America or set in Africa? Imagine all the unique settings you could have in South America with all the islands, the jungles, the ancient temples. The jungles would be on par with, if not more dangerous, than the glowing sea, with giant radioactive bugs, lizards, and spiders around every corner and stalking you atop every tree. Maybe the temples were retrofitted with pre-war tech to protect them from the bombs, similar to the vaults. The way that brings me to my other setting in Africa. Imagine a Wakanda-like nation, completely untouched by the war, gets discovered by what's left of tribes outside of it. As a protagonist, you get to decide the fate of the city. I just realized I basically described Fallout New Vegas' main plot, but my point still stands. Imagine the radioactive hippos and elephants. It would be cool, I tell you. Like I said earlier, hope you gentlemen are doing great. Have an awesome weekend. Okay, so what you were actually describing didn't really remind me of Fallout New Vegas because you mentioned like tribes and stuff. In the beginning of Fallout 2, you're in a tribe. I was thinking of Fallout 2. You go through a whole trial before leaving your village. And if you're mentioning something like that, I think the whole Wakanda idea and really your Fallout Africa idea would fall in line with Fallout 2, which would be cool to see. For me, I have to say, out of these two, I don't know which I'd rather see because I'm relatively uninformed on their locations and their offerings. But I also feel like would it overlap too much with Far Cry? Is my major question. Would Fallout start to overlap with Far Cry here? You know, just because I know Far Cry likes its tropical settings, I don't think Fallout's really dabbled in a tropical like setting. And, you know, both being first-person shooters, lots of collectathon type of activities, those types of things, mechanically speaking, tropical feeling world. Just spitballing some ideas out there. I would probably say, based off what you're posing here, I think Fallout Africa sounds cool. I would want to see, and I know it's been a rumor for a while, but I really genuinely do want to see Fallout New Orleans. That's kind of the one that I'm hoping for. Of course, whatever location they put out, they could say Fallout Canada or Fallout Africa or Fallout Italy. I don't care. I would be interested because I think anything that would catch me off guard from my general expectations would be nice because it would be someone thinking outside the box and going, okay, we all know you want New Orleans and we could do that. And we did think about doing that, but we're actually going to do this thing over here instead because we've had this idea that you didn't know about. And I remember Obsidian said many years ago, this was like 6-7 years ago, they said they wanted to do Fallout New Orleans if they were to do a new location. And I think that would be a really good fit. I just, once they said that, it stuck in my head. I was like, dang, this would be awesome. So that'd be my pick. But based off your two suggestions here, Billy Mays, definitely Fallout Africa. Sounds cooler. All right, that'll do it for episode 295 of the Ham Radio Podcast. If you got this deep, just tag me on Twitter, #SoloShow. Let me know you got this far. Throw it in the comments. I don't mean to wrap this one up too quickly, but my voice is shot right now. I want to go rest, relax. It's 8:30 at night, and so no one's fault, of course, just the way the schedule got pushed back and stuff. It's going to be a really late night before I get this up onto, Patreon and whatnot. So I appreciate all of you who stayed tuned, enjoyed this show. I hope you found it enjoyable. Once again, as you can tell, I'm so shot. I just said enjoyable twice, but whatever. I will talk to all of you very soon, all right? Stay sexy, stay active. I love you all. Peace.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.